From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Welcome to episode number 133, where I'm joined by my buddies Matt and John, whom you met a couple of weeks ago on the Keto Crossover episode. Matt Murray is a 48-year-old that lives in Delaware, which is on the east coast of the US. He's been married for 20 years and has three teenage daughters, a dog and a cat. Matt started keto 4 years ago after being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome. Through diet and other lifestyle changes, Matt was able to return his health and weight to normal. John Slaughter lives in a town on the mid-Atlantic seaboard of the United States near the Chesapeake Bay. John stumbled upon the paleo diet while looking online for a recipe for a party. After following a paleo diet for over a year, he learned about the ketogenic way of eating from a friend who had been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. A proponent of natural remedies, John's philosophy is do what you can first, instead of immediately going down the path of pharmaceuticals. John loves to cook and create delicious recipes that are simple. He has shared his keto experiences and recipes with family, friends, and anyone else who wants more information. He likes creating simple recipes that anyone can make because he believes living a ketogenic lifestyle will make for a happier planet one person at a time. John's other hobbies include hiking, kayaking, and homesteading. He keeps a brood of hens as a source for fresh eggs, landscapes with edible and medicinal plants, makes medicinal tinctures and herbal tea blends, and makes his own personal care products such as face cream and hand salve. John partnered with his best friend Matt to turn his hobby of making natural skincare products into a business. Together, they launched Nature's Jam, making handmade, all-natural skincare products in small batches. When someone uses one of our products, I not only want them to love how it makes their skin look and feel, I want the aroma to lift the person up and make them feel good. You can find out more about their products at naturesjam.com. And of course, the links will be in the show notes and on the links page as usual. Probably unsurprisingly, this was another recording that ran long, so I've split it into two parts. In this first episode, you'll find out about Matt and John, as well as all sorts of other bits and bobs we go off on tangents talking about. As I was editing, some of the bits I would usually take out made me smile, so I left them in. I hope they make you smile too, as you get to hear some of the real life things that happen behind the curtain. Welcome, John and Matt, to the Keto Women podcast. How are you both doing today?
Doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm great, thanks. Good to be here. Again.
Again, yes. It seems like only yesterday. It was last weekend when we were here, wasn't it? Recording
right.
With the gang.
That's the only part of this week that seems to have gone fast, because this week felt really long.
It's a dragging one, was it?
Yeah, some of them were really fast. That. When all this started, it was really fast, and this one just didn't, you know, I think between John and I and my wife, I think both on like Tuesday or Wednesday, we're like, God, it feels like Thursday or Friday, and it just, it wasn't.
It should have been. Yeah, I'm ready for a day off besides a weekend.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
It is.
A while ago, people were thinking, having to stay at home for a day would be a real treat, but I should imagine a lot of people are thinking very differently now.
Well, we've had no prom, no graduation. My oldest is a senior, so those went away. My youngest just turned 13, so we had a fake quarantine party, and then next week is my wife and I 20th anniversary, so that's... We'll be celebrating in the kitchen, I guess, you know, so you do what you can.
All sorts of things that have just been postponed, I guess. I think there are going to be a lot of parties when this thing is all over.
Yeah, when I see people out walking the dog, they're already talking about the block party for the ages once we can hang out. But here, I was going to try not to talk about this, but here we are again.
It's difficult, isn't it?
Well, it's what's going on in the world.
You can edit all this out.
Yeah, I was being more quiet, like we were on a radio show or something. Like it was live.
She can get rid of anything dumb we say.
Well, I can try.
Where's Matt? I thought Matt was here. I edited him out the whole time.
My editing skills do have their limitations, Matt.
Matt was on the podcast, but we edited him out, so that silences Matt. Lovely, lovely.
My editing skills have their limitations.
Well, this is normally the point where I say, tell me about you. So who wants to go first?
I will. This is Matt. Again, 48, three daughters, married almost 20 years now, dog and a cat. I have known Daisy now for about, I think, three years. Met through keto. What got me going down this road was I just wasn't feeling good one day, and I decided to take my blood pressure, and it was like 170 over 110. So I kind of went into panic attack mode and was calling all the doctors to get in immediately. My doctor couldn't see me for months, so I actually found a new practice, and the specialist they gave me, oddly enough, was a diabetes nurse. So she came in, met me, gave me my tests, calls me back with my blood work and everything, and says, do you want the bad news or the bad news? I had metabolic syndrome. I had type 2 diabetes. My fasting was 174. My A1C was 7.2 or 7.4. I don't remember. I was overweight, but not extremely. I've never been overweight by normal standards. I'm one of those toffees, is what they called us, you know, thin on the outside, fat on the inside. So I got into keto, major shift, getting rid of, well, one, I stopped drinking beer. So that went out the window, you know, pizza, sandwiches, all those fun things. Went back for my 3-month checkup, and my A1C had gone down to 5.9, and then
yeah, don't worry. As long as it's you speaking, not me.
Oh, right, that's right. These people can't hear this dog barking. Right, sorry. They're like, why is he stopping? So it was 7.2 or 7.4. Then I got it down to 5.9, and then the next checkup, it went down to 5.2. So just through diet, I was able to fix that part. I lost about 50 pounds. In fact, I lost too much weight, honestly. I overstepped with going keto. I was very regimented when I started. And as we'll probably get into over the time, I've shifted more to what people call dirty keto or lazy keto. I'm not wholly convinced that I have type 2. I think I have some genetic flavor of it, like GCK Modi or something like that. No matter what I do, I have high AM blood sugar, and it goes down every single day. And when in the evening, it's not impacted by food so much. But the test is very expensive, and it's so rare that people don't even believe you might have it. But I'm not going to change what I'm doing, because it's worked so well, and we've done it so long now that it's second nature to, you know, to have a protein and a veg. If we do something bready, it's keto bread. We all cook. I cook. My wife cooks. John, who's here, he cooks too. So we've been that's been a plus side to the to the isolation, I guess, is being able to have time to cook because we don't have appointments for all our children's after school events. So we try to spread the word as we can. Some people don't seem to get what a carb is. I've currently got a friend telling me that she wants to cut down on her inflammation and asking how much fruit she can have. And telling people that fruit is going to kind of go out the window, I think, is a big sidestep, and all the pasta and all the bread. But I don't miss it. So I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed meeting the people that we've met and being here. And hopefully somebody will, hear this. And if they're keto, stay keto. If they're not, maybe start. It's not hard. It's not expensive. You feel great. And I guess that's my long-winded walk in.
It certainly doesn't have to be. I know it can be.
Oh, well, sure. You can buy grass-fed, super...
But anything's like that, isn't it?
Right, yeah. You can, you can drive a Toyota or you can drive a Lamborghini. They're both going to get you to the same place. and I got three kids. I don't got grass-fed beef money every day, so...
But yeah, you like toying around with recipes.
Absolutely. Yeah, recipes.
You've done your own riff on Fathead, haven't you? Mathead pizza?
I did, yeah. And then John kind of stole it from me, and now he's kind of got the standing pizza recipe that we use now. Yeah, we make it with wings. So we generally have wings and pizza night, which is, the suffering.
Oh, there's an update, is there? I haven't heard about the John Head pizza.
Yeah.
Well, Matt's was kind of like a process improvement to Fathead pizza, and then mine was a process improvement, I think, to Mathead pizza. I melt the mozzarella cheese and the cream cheese together first, and then I've already mixed the almond flour and the bacon powder. So then I knead that into the melted cheese as first before I add the two eggs, and it makes for a more homogeneous dough ball.
It goes in the fridge, which is super, super crucial because right. When he first makes it, it's unmanageable. You can't.
It's real sticky.
Yeah, so a couple hours in the fridge and it comes out real nice and it's, we love it. But you can use it for rolls and breads and a whole bunch of variations.
Yes, it was actually a recipe someone sent me for keto bagels. So I used it for keto bagels and I'm like, I could use this for other things. And I think Matt was actually the one who said, let's try it for the pizza crust.
Yeah.
But I've made bagels. We would take it and divide it into six balls and press them down, kind of like a hamburger patty. And then after you bake them, you can slice them. They're thin, but they make nice hamburger rolls. And then I've even divided them further down into, I think, eight pieces and then taken the tip of the ball and put it in, I think it was coconut flour, but then baked it as a dinner roll. And that was quite tasty too.
Oh, that's what we can do, Daisy. Instead of sending you pictures of ourselves, I'll send you some of the 8 million food pics I have on my phone. And you can share those so people can see how easy it is to have fun. And like I said, Kim, who's not here, keeps pushing John and I to do a cooking stream thing because the way we interact in the kitchen is quite comical. We're very, very different people. We're best friends, but we're night and day different. And it's funny in the kitchen. We have a good riff.
Well, we were talking about that, weren't we? After Keto Fest, it must have been 2018 because you weren't.
Yeah, we didn't make 20. Yeah, there, I couldn't
sadly,
make 2019.
Last year. Yeah, so it was after that and we were talking about it. You even did a test run. I remember you sent me a little video of you doing a test run.
John's got the GoPro and everything. Yeah, he's ready. I got to get past my whole self being on YouTube thing. It really freaks me out.
As I said in last week's podcast, the reason why I got the GoPro is I knew that I was going to have to go that alone if I wanted to do cooking demos, because Matt had already expressed that he wasn't interested in being on the internet like that.
I can change.
And I can understand the reason being.
Just don't read the comments, right?
But so that's why I got the GoPro, because I think that's the important point of view anyway. It's like, look at what I'm doing as I'm doing it.
Absolutely.
Right, because you don't need to look at me. I'm not the interesting part here. It's the food.
And it's going to be the best perspective, isn't it? Because it's what you're looking at. You're looking at what you're doing.
Yeah.
So it should give you a good shot.
Exactly.
I suppose you have to be careful not to move your head around too much. It might make the viewer feel a bit sick.
We got nothing but time,
That's right. We'll share your riffs on Fathead. I seem to remember, wasn't yours, the big difference with yours, Matt, was the addition of xanthan gum. Is that right? I know it's the one that we've been using.
Yeah, there was the xanthan.
It's certainly the one we used last year.
Yeah, the process with I use a food processor. I don't melt it. And then it was the the way I smushed it out with the, I use a crab mallet because that's what I had, but I make these big rectangular pizzas that actually, that, so the crust gets thin because, the, you know, that crust can get really, really filling.
Mm.
And the dough is not the easiest thing to work with. So I came up with a process where if you want to take the time, you can make a really nice, thin, thin crust. And when we started making round ones too, and the only way we could get them was take two, I guess, what, cake pans, line them both with parchment, and then just stack them and then nest them and then stand on it and in the kitchen and just use your full body weight to smush it down like a, like you make a tortilla, and it would make a perfectly round little, but you could never get it by hand. It's just, it's too much to work with. So we're not afraid to try pretty much anything, you know, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, it's still usually not horrible, you know.
That's right, as long as it's edible. It's a win.
Yeah, and we looked at different things that we've done is, you know, could we make crusts and sell them? Could we make, like, you know, like Betty Crocker type things, like make people keto dry packages and sell them, you know, at that, and then they do the wet part? Because that, like, that's how I grew up. That's how baking is. I knew it. That's how my mom baked. But John is every single item is from scratch. My wife's mom was like that too. Like, the cake mix was from scratch. The frosting was from scratch. But there's a lot of portion of the population that doesn't have the time or the desire to do that.
Mm.
So you just throw the dry ingredients together and sell them that. And none of these ideas ever came to fruition, but that kind of got leveraged into John as a hobby, just making skincare stuff, face cream, salves and stuff like that. And people would say, you know, this is great. It's all natural. And I really like what you're doing. You should sell it. So John got convinced that he could do that. Then he convinced me to help him do that. And we started a little company called Nature's Jam. And we make a hand salve, a lip balm, a face cream, and I'm actually going to be working with John later on, what, an eye cream, I guess?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
That started, my sister asked me to make her something, and that's how making the face cream started anyway. But I'll back up and give you a little intro to me as well, as far as keto is concerned. Probably all my life, I've, especially teenage years, I've always been like body conscious. Back before it was even popular, I was doing intermittent fasting because I thought that that is what made sense for me. Especially in my late teen years, early 20s, the best diet for me was I just ate every other day. So it seemed to work. But on the days that I ate the pizza and, you know, ice cream and whatever else that I wanted.
And was that just something you intuitively fell into? It wasn't something that you'd seen somebody talking about. You just, that's just what felt right.
That's just what felt right to me. It's what worked for me because I could... instead of denying myself, you know, the ice cream or the pizza, it was easier for me to just say, okay, I won't eat on Monday, or I won't eat on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You know, that just made sense to me. Or I would eat breakfast and then I'd go to school and then just go to the library for lunch. And then at dinner time, I would eat dinner.
You got to give credit to poverty too.
Well, that was early childhood. But yeah, we had the, I think in high school, we had the meal tickets that we went down for and to get lunch and stuff. And I stopped going to in the mornings to get those, and I would just go to the library instead. Sometimes the body consciousness was valid and sometimes it wasn't. Looking back, I know that now is probably invalid more than it was. But I had gained some weight during the years, probably in my 30s. Actually, for Matt's wedding, I was probably in the best shape of my life because I was eating well, dieting. I went to the gym like every day. So I was buff. But after that, probably around 2000, 2001, actually, I had gone to India for work, and then I visited my sister who was living in Germany at the time. And when I came home, that is about the time that I went on the Atkins diet for the first time. And I was able to lose, I think, about 20 pounds and was back to a weight that I enjoyed. But of course, after I lost the weight, I could eat what I wanted again. So,
yeah, you were very, very strict about that intro period. I remember that. It was very – I never did Atkins, but I know how regimented it was about what you could and could not have.
Yeah, that two-week induction period. But then I had lost the weight back then, and I was still working out, and it seemed to make sense, you know, eating low carb. – But through the ages and through, you know, beer drinking and stuff like that, I had gained the weight back. I was probably about almost 50 pounds overweight in 2014, actually 2013, when I stumbled upon the paleo diet. I was looking for a recipe. I saw a recipe from a website that's still around. I like the guy's recipes. I still use a lot of them today.
Who's that? What site is that?
I mean, shout him out.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know if I was able to. His name is Russ Crandall, and he's the Domestic Man. So thedomesticman.com, his recipe for Colorado chili
is
delicious. Yeah. In fact, I used the liquid from the Colorado chili after we ate it for dinner last week. I took the liquid and kept it because it's very runny. I added some, is it unsweetened? It's
the not ketchup, unsweetened. The no-sugar ketchup.
Yeah, it's a no-sugar ketchup, but it's sweetened with something. I think it's erythritol, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then I added a little bit of smoked paprika and made it into a barbecue sauce.
For the ribs we're having tomorrow.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, yeah, ribs.
Nice.
Yeah.
Russ had an autoimmune disease, and he was doing, I don't want to tell his story, but he was doing a lot of medical procedures and everything, and then it came down to he started to change his diet and realized that his diet was helping him to get better, and he recommended a book by, I'm not going to attempt the author's name because I don't know it off the top of my head, but it's called Your Personal Paleo Code. So in that, there was a 30-day reset where you didn't drink dairy, and it was really to clean your system, and then you start introducing foods back in to find out how does your body interact with that food. Some people may have a milk allergy. Some people are allergic to nightshades. So find out what it is that you can and cannot eat yourself. And when Matt first introduced me to keto, there was a saying that went around all the time is N equals one.
Hey,
and
yeah,
this is where I first started. What works for you? So that was 2014 that I did the 30-day reset in January, even throughout my birthday, because I think I had started it early January. And after I did the reset, every time I would cook, I was trying to get Matt and his wife to cook with the paleo ingredients. You know, oh, look, you know, it makes so much more sense. And I was kind of down that path anyway. Just things in nature make more sense than synthetic things to me.
John's a hippie.
Yeah. So.
Without the dreads and the Grateful Dead. Yeah, he's very into all natural. Everything has always been very driving force for him.
So 2014, I was trying to get his wife and everything, and I remember the incident that Matt was talking about. He said, you know, my blood pressure is so high. This is like get your ass to the hospital kind of blood pressure. So he was scared and made his appointment, and like within a week or so, he's like, well, I'm diabetic, and I was very glad that he decided to see what he could do. That was not pharmaceuticals, because even the years leading up to that, you know, I was always saying, try what you can first, and then if you still, and it was mostly for anxiety, do what you can, like, do you meditate, do you exercise, do that stuff first before you, you know, get your prescription for Xanax or feel that you have to pop a Xanax. So when he got diagnosed with diabetes, it was great to see him say, you know what, I'm not going to go on the statins that they want to put me on. I'm going to correct this with diet. And because I was already eating paleo, and I do cook over their house probably just as much as I cook over my house, it was easy to make little changes to the recipes I was making. It was trying to relearn a lot of cooking, though, and make keto recipes. And then I wanted to bring up the point that you guys brought up about, you know, it's expensive. And I use the same arguments, Daisy, that any diet is expensive depending on what you eat. Mm-hmm. Keto is going to be expensive if you're, you know, getting filet mignon every night or ribeye steaks. But there are so many recipes. Keto Fest 2018, we made dirty rice because it very inexpensive ingredients and makes a very tasty dish.
Yeah. That one surprised a lot of people, I think.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, oh, great, boring rice. And it was actually, people came back for seconds, which was nice.
Yeah,
that was fun.
And the rice was the cauliflower, by the way. It's just
I think a lot of the most interesting recipes actually are the...
Oh, we're getting the time to go warning from Zoom.
No, that was
the robot.
She just talks every once in a while. I'll throw Milo's bed over.
I think a lot of the best recipes are those that come out of people who have to try and make something interesting out of cheap and potentially boring ingredients, because they don't have the money to go out and buy the fancy ingredients. You know, anyone really can make a nice meal out of fancy ingredients, but it's much more of a challenge.
Yeah.
If you've only got bits of this and bits of that and scraps from something else that you made the other day, and putting together something from that. I think that's where having basic cooking skills really comes into play, having a feel for what might work together, and so that you can look in your cupboard, you can look in your fridge and think, oh, what can I make with these potentially disparate ingredients and actually make something tasty from it. Usually adding cheese helps.
Yeah, we make just meatloaf quite a bit. It's you know, whatever your meat blend you want, we usually throw some sausage in there. Mm-hmm. But we would make it, and then we'd want just a sauce, because fatty sauces are where it's at. And we found we were throwing away all the fat that came from the meatloaf and making a sauce, and we were like, hey, let's just take all this fat and puree up some roasted red peppers and do it together with a stick blender. And I'll tell you what, it makes one of the most amazing sauces you've ever had. It's almost pure fat. Like, if you save some and put it in the fridge, it sets up.
Mm, sounds good.
It's so good. And it was a matter of, well, this is what we have. Let's give it a shot. And we've tried it with different vegetables and stuff. And it's a you know, an easy way to what would be waste, help you, you know, up your fat, which for some people on keto can be a challenge anyway. So that's an example of, you know, use what you have and end up winning.
I give you credit for Jazzy Sunday, Matt, but I think I'll take credit for that one. That was like, oh, let's just pour this fat off the meatloaf and add some roasted red peppers.
And... agree, disagree.
Blend okay. It up.
Yeah, right.
How did you guys meet?
Mutual friend. John is actually 7 years older than me, which at this point is not a thing. But when you're a kid, 7 years is a lifetime. My best friend, Chris, who's since passed away, he obviously was my best friend, and he worked with John at the movie theater and would just talk about his friend Matt, and John never put it together, because literally John and I live very close to each other. I live behind his neighborhood. I grew up behind his neighborhood. And finally, I guess he met me or saw me or something. He's like, oh, that guy. And then we were, you know, kind of acquaintances for a few years just here and there. And I still don't know how we ended up hanging out more, but. It's 20 some odd years now, but yeah, my kids all call him Uncle John. So it's been a long time. We're very different musically and temperamentally and everything. What we like, movies, everything. Our tastes are extremely different, but somehow I'm very amped up and John's mellow. You know, you're mellow, Daisy. I tend to surround myself with mellow people because I am just not mellow.
I'm not always mellow.
Oh, Daisy, I invented the seasoned potato wedges before Kentucky Fried Chicken came out with them. It goes back to being creative in the kitchen. I was in college, and I literally had potatoes and shake and bake. So I'm like, what can I do?
Right.
So I cut the potatoes into wedges. I put them in shake and bake and then stuck them in the oven.
Too bad doesn't even have. Do you guys even have Kentucky Fried Chicken over there? Probably not. I don't know. Maybe it's worldwide. It's garbage.
Yeah, we do. We do. It is garbage.
It's garbage.
It is here too.
I went there not so long ago because I think there was a new one on the way to one of the airports I go to. And I thought, oh, I'll go in there, see what all the fuss about. I think I had to wait an hour for the food. And then, yeah, it was garbage.
Now it's all about bowls of mashed potatoes and corn. So those are out the window, you know. Heavily breaded chicken.
Yeah. I just had the normal chicken and end up just stripping off.
Right. Not a flavor.
Which wasn't great. Anyway, it's like, what's the, why did I come in here? Total waste of time.
You gotta try it.
But yes, the wedges are a thing in the McDonald's here.
Oh, wow.
Another place I haven't been to for a long, long time, actually. But they're, it's the kind of thing that crops up occasionally in the UK. But in France, they obviously decided they like the wedges because it's always an option. You can either have the fries or the wedges.
We have nothing like that. Nothing like that in our McDonald's. No.
Wow.
I'll be telling them next time I go in there. My friend John invented those. Right?
Yeah, that was a couple years before KFC came out with them. But like I said, it was because that's what I had on hand. I had to be creative. I've try to convince a lot of family members, because a lot of my family is overweight. And when I lost I think I said last week that on paleo, I had lost about 20 pounds, but after about 2 years, I wasn't getting rid of the other weight that I wanted to lose. I got back down to about 200 pounds, but that wasn't my ideal weight. I was still overweight. When I started keto, I really kicked in, and within 3 months, I had lost the other 25 pounds. Mm. I felt much better. I used to take Prilosec, which is for heartburn. I would take it all the time, like daily. Or if I knew I was going to be eating a food that was going to cause me heartburn, then I would take one as a preemptive strike. And once I started on keto, I no longer had heartburn. And I just felt better, less inflammation and everything. So I tried to convince my family. And my sister-in-law said, her daughter actually asked, like, isn't it expensive to eat keto? And my sister-in-law immediately jumped in and said, yes. And I'm like, well, no, it's not. It depends. Anything could be expensive. It depends on what you want to eat. And it's not hard either. And that's why I have a brother and a sister. If they can get it out of the freezer or the refrigerator and stick it in a toaster, they are great with it. Mm. Otherwise, you know, they aren't going to take the time to actually cook anything because, I don't know, I guess it's too hard. But it's really not. You know, if you can boil water, you can eat keto.
Mm. Yeah. My wife is keto, so it's easy for us.
Yeah. She makes some good stuff too, doesn't she?
She does. She does.
She does.
What would you say was the difference then going from paleo to keto? I hear that quite a lot, actually, that typical trajectory that people lose some weight when they start paleo. I mean, to be honest, anything you do really to clean up your diet is going to improve things, isn't it? But then they get to a point where they can't really seem to get any further as far as weight loss goes. And often they find the way to drop that next amount is to go keto. But I was wondering, what do you think is the reason for that? Presumably it was a certain group of foods. I think there are a lot of things in paleo that once you cut them out, there are still quite a few things that aren't very keto friendly, aren't there?
They're not. A great one to bring up would be sweet potatoes. Yeah. You know, we loved sweet potatoes. And when I would cook keto, it's easy to get rid of French fries. We can make sweet potato wedges and we make a nice sriracha mayonnaise to dip them in. But you're getting a lot of carbs then. So even though you're eating well and eating more nutritious food, it's still very high in carbs. So your body's still running on the glucose.
Yeah. Paleo is about removing processed foods and stuff, which, you know, like you said, Daisy, giant step in the right direction. Because of keto, you almost have to eliminate processed foods as a rule because what's in them is not mm-hmm. keto. But yeah, they have all the arrowroot or whatever it's called, the rice flour and all this stuff that, while maybe better for you than wheat, is still very, very carb heavy. So that I think that's the step where you've gotten everything cleaned up, your body's working better, and then you say, okay, now I'm going to take these things out. Mm-hmm. Not because they're necessarily unhealthy for everyone, but because if you do have blood sugar impact or insulin problems, they're going to raise your insulin just as much as, you know, bread is going to or sugar is going to. And then that's when you see you hit that plateau and then you go down beyond that because of keto. And then some people extrapolate, you know, even further yet into carnivore and those variants of keto. So it's, you know, you just find your level of exclusion that works best for you that you can do on a day-to-day basis, you know, of course, allowing for being human and cheating here and there. I don't recommend it, but it happens for people. And then kind of try to maintain, maintenance, we call it. Yeah, try to stay in maintenance.
You mentioned, Matt, that you found that you went too far the other way. And I mean, that's not something that's ever been a problem for me. And a lot of the people that I talk to, they usually have an issue with weight and it's not a problem that they found. But you do hear people asking the question sometimes, well, you know, what happens when I get to the weight that I want to be? If I carry on with keto, am I just going to keep losing weight? And for most people, they do just level out and they find their natural weight and they don't go past that point. But
well, I leveled out
earlier that you started going a bit past it.
I was
too much weight.
And the thing is, I was never, I mean, the level of what obese is not huge, but I was I'm about 6 feet tall almost. And I was, I don't need to see the Mr. Tall guy. And I was, my heaviest was 204 and I got down to 157. And also I have my short hair. And so everyone asked me if I was sick, if I had cancer, if I was losing weight on purpose and everything, because it came off so quick. And part of that, generally I've seen that guys have it easier than women because we don't have all the hormones and things to deal with it that you guys do, you know, like I think it's a general rule in the keto community where you see guys laughing like, "Oh, I dropped 40 pounds and barely blinked," and all the women are like, "Yeah, I don't want to hear about all that. You know, I'm measuring everything I'm doing." But I could have stayed there, but I did. Especially my mother is, you know, "Matthew, you're too skinny." I just think the ideal weight in America, if somebody is thin, it's so abnormal in this country that people worry for you. So I just, you know, relaxed a little bit, and I got up to, right now I'm about 173 is where I kind of try to range. 165 would probably be my ideal perfect weight, and if I tightened up, I'd be there. That's what I was in high school, so that's what I always kind of look at and go, that's a good weight, you know, that's a good weight to be. But I'm 8 pounds above that. I don't worry about it. I've kept it off now for 4 years. But you notice, and John will tell you the same, is when you're in maintenance, you know when you're slipping. You know, you bring in a big thing of nuts in your house, or you go get a big block of cheese, or you have a big tub of peanut butter. You know, things that are good in certain amounts, but are also very easy to just cram in your face. So, you know, if you buy clothes that really fit, you notice like 2 pounds can, you know, change on your jeans or change on a shirt or something. And you go, oh, I better tighten things up a little bit, or I'm going to go put on sweatpants, whichever angle you want to take. So you just got to pay attention.
There are options.
Yeah, you got to pay attention. You know, I'm not saying people should weigh themselves every day, because I certainly don't, but you can tell when you feel like, you know, you're slipping a little bit. And that's just what it is it's every day. It's just like anything else. Like, I don't drink anymore. And people say, you know, oh, you're never going to drink again. And all I can say is, I'm not going to drink today. Because if I look down the road, I got all my years ahead of me. That's too big. So I'm going to try to do, you know, I'm not going to drink today. I'm going to do the best keto I can today. If I don't, you know, I'll do the best keto I can tomorrow. And that's my idea of maintenance. You have long-term goals, but you've got to break things down into manageable parts, or you're going to get overwhelmed.
Well, I think that's one of the most common things, isn't it? What you mean, I can never eat bread again, or I can never eat this again? And like you say, yeah, if you just switch that perspective away, and yeah, you're not saying that. You're not saying you're never going to do it again. You're just not going to do it now, and you're not going to do it.
Yeah, because if you do, you're not going to explode, you know? And some people, mm-hmm. And I understand there's addiction problems with alcohol, there's addiction problems with food, and I don't mean to diminish that. But yeah, if you are concerned that if you have bread, that, you know, you're going to fall off the keto wagon and go bread crazy, that's something that you personally have to, you know, have to reconcile. But like John, before keto, well, he still is, baked crazy. So now he bakes, you know, cookies for my kids, brownies and stuff. Chances are I'm going to try one when they come in the house, just because I know they're going to be so good. But that doesn't mean I'm going to have a cookie every day, or I'm going to have a brownie every day. And I don't beat myself up about having that treat, you know, but that's how I manage this. So other people
keep calm and keto.
Exactly, on. Exactly. But you know, you got to find what works for you. The level of keto you get into is up to you. Some people, you know, data people, they love to measure the weight of everything. People take pictures of their hands to document all their food. I don't do that. I've never done that. I kept a mental tab. I find what works for me. And then you learn, you know, like, oh, this, I didn't think this food would have carbs in it. Oh my gosh, it really does. What was that one you bought, John? It was a jicama, or I don't know, something we were going to make fries out of, and we looked. No, it was it celery root? I don't remember. But it was really high carb.
Celery.
And we were like, oh, this is going to be great. And I Googled it up to look at recipes, and I'm like, dude, these are higher carb than potatoes. But that's the thing. So then you put that in your mental notebook, you know, like, oh.
Yucca.
Oh, yucca. Yeah, yucca. Yeah, right.
Yucca.
Oh, yeah, that really stuck.
No, we didn't know. We just saw it at the supermarket, and he bought it and brought it over, and we're like, oh, lesson learned.
Well, I think that it's on the paleo mm-hmm. diet, because it's a
potato substitute. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one, Matt, going back to Daisy's question about the difference between the two is you're allowed fruit. Yeah. Anything that's natural mm-hmm. and a natural food source. So I would love bananas, but they are not keto at all. They're either starch or sugar.
And dates.
A date, yeah.
They make loads of sweets with loads of dates in it. And that's dates have got an incredible amount of sugar in them, haven't they?
Like figs too, yeah. Mm.
Talking about measuring, I think that's a good point. I made some granola bars at one time, and Matt said, well, that's great. It's like, but you know, just because you put dried cherries on them, a lot of keto folks would say, nope, that's off the table. I'm like, yeah, but the amount of carbs you're getting from the cherries is less than 1 gram, because I saw what a serving size of cherries was. I took the little dried cherries and I cut them into little teeny pieces.
You did too.
Because all you need is a little fruity tartness here and there when you're eating it. And it's just that flavor and that little explosion in the back of your mouth when you taste that tartness.
Mm, sounds good. Another recipe I want.
Okay.
I think he doesn't even really do like when you guys ask for recipes, he's got to make one up, because he doesn't use recipes very often. He just, like you said, Daisy, he uses his knowledge of cooking to make things up. And then people are like, this is great. What was it? And he's like, man, I don't know. It was what we had.
To be honest, we were having this conversation with Kim, weren't we?
Yeah.
Most of the things we make, it's a bit of this, a bit of that, and it doesn't taste quite right. What do I need to add? Add a bit of this, add a bit of that. That was most of my cooking is like that.
The cauliflower mash that you wanted from my wife, she's like, I don't know. I don't have a recipe for Daisy. So she actually kind of went through it in her head and was like, well, this will get you there, you know, but you have to. When people that don't try food, that's crazy to me. Like, you have to try it.
When we made the dirty rice for Keto Fest, we did the trial run because there was no recipe. We had to make it in order to figure out what to write down for a recipe to give out.
Someone posted the other day, edible weeds. Do you know pokeweed? Here we call it American pokeweed, but sometimes it's one of those things that
I went in a totally different direction. I went a totally different direction there. I'm like, oh, Daisy's got to start talking about edibles. All right, well, here we go. yeah, we have pokeweed here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were saying that
it has the purple berry, right? Is that the pokeweed?
That's
the one that has
it has
purple
these
berry?
Sort of drooping racemes.
Yeah, it grows really, really big.
White. Yeah. Massive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then really black. Yeah. Little blackberries.
You guys eat that?
Well, no, hold on. Get ahead of yourself. And the birds love it and they spread it all over the place.
Yeah.
And it really grows like a weed here. And it's a perennial one and it has a massive taproot and it's a bugger to get rid of. You just keep mowing it, strimming it, and it does go away.
Yeah.
But I was reading the other day that it's the new shoots that come up that apparently are absolutely delicious. So, of course, I was going around as I was mowing the other day looking for patches. Can I find a bloody patch of pokeweed? But I know there's some somewhere in my field, so I'm going to be cultivating a bit. But it's the young stems that come up that apparently are really delicious. So
Sold us on dandelion
greens,
which we can't use. Nice. We can't use here because everybody sprays their lawn, so that you don't know what's on them. But yeah, I guess you buy them at the co-op or something, John.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good. You know, I guess apparently the whole part of the dandelion is edible.
Will you stop?
You don't have any neighbors. Who are they? What are they barking at?
I do have neighbors. I have the people. They're just up above, and every time any one of them speaks outside or one of their dogs moves outside, Rocket thinks he's got to bark his head off.
That's John's dog. I saw your curtains moving, John. Was that Milo back there trying to save the world?
Yeah, he went to go over and lie on his bed that I threw on top of the vac. And when he got over there, it spoke again. So he froze and then just came back and laid back down here.
Oh, good.
They're very popular. You see the little old ladies going out with their carrier bags to collect them from the hedgerows here. It's actually called pissenlit in French, which means piss the bed. So I think they're a diuretic, so don't eat too many of them or you might piss
the
lee.
Dandelions?
Yeah.
Yes. They're also a liver tonic.
Yes, and apparently someone was telling me she was busy collecting up the roots and mm-hmm. she was making them into a tea that she swore help treat her cancer. So, you know, who knows? All sorts of things.
Oh, Daisy, do you have knotweed there? I've heard that's like the worst thing in the world and it's coming to America.
It is the worst thing in the world. I haven't actually seen it in France. No, I tell a lie. Someone up the road has it. I don't see it too much, but in the UK, yeah, it's an absolute pest. It's everywhere. And once it gets going, it's a
nightmare.
They
said if it's in your yard, you can't even sell your house because it will. Mm. It's so invasive. It'll come up through your floor and crack your...
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, gosh.
Oh, wow.
We had it when I was a kid. And it used to come up through the concrete floor of the garage. It's a nightmare. It's not... Well, it's
it acts like... I think it spreads like bamboo, right? Doesn't it's underground and it'll just crawl and crawl. Yeah.
That's
like
and
the
it's
Canadian
huge.
Thistle out here.
Oh, yeah. John got stuck with that from some straw or some hay. His whole he had to nuke his whole yard.
I think that it was it's just in this general area. You see a lot of it out at Fair Hill also.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to try, and I must go out and look and see if they're ready, are ferns, the fronds as they come up. Fiddleheads, they're called fiddleheads, mm-hmm. aren't they? When you have them apparently tastes like it tastes like a cross between asparagus and something else. I can't remember what the something else is, but it sounded quite nice. I keep meaning to do that. But obviously, if you miss the boat, it's that one time of year when they're good to eat. And if you miss that, you have to wait till next year. but I keep meaning to try some of these things.
I have neighbors that down the street that planted asparagus 3 some years ago, so it's finally going to be ready to harvest, and they just sold their house. So I don't know the new people that live there. Because it's funny, people say, like, asparagus looks like a joke of what you'd think asparagus grows like. Like, it really just, one piece of asparagus just comes up out of the ground. Yeah. And you're like, that's not real. But then it turns into a huge bush with, like, red berries and all this stuff. So I'm going to be like, you guys going to eat that asparagus right there?
I love asparagus.
I was surprised by the way.
You got to be patient to grow it, though.
The way pineapples grow. It's like, you know, I was surprised. This, oh, that's pineapple?
I don't know what they grow like.
Yeah, you can get them. They're all the rage as cute little houseplants now. You just like little mini ones, but I think they grow the same way. They're just like little shrubs, aren't they?
Yeah.
The pineapple sits on the top.
Yep.
Yeah, I kind of thought they'd be on a tree. I don't know why.
That's what I thought too.
I thought they were on a tree.
They're more like the tree.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. And bananas grow upside down.
It's like a bit like a thistle in a way, isn't it? It's like the thistle on the top. A bit like globe artichokes.
We have the Longwood Gardens close enough to here that we can go there, and they have a giant conservatory, and they have bananas and plantains, and they don't grow like what you're going to think either. They grow in these ginormous bunches, and they
upside down,
they hang down upside down,
not the way that we hang bananas.
No, the opposite.
Yeah, the opposite way.
Yeah,
Daisy, the segue into talking about the wild edibles is actually how I got into a lot of the stuff, the Nature's Jam, but it's through taking classes and stuff on edible and medicinal wild herbs or plants. It's like I took one class in, I think it was in Pennsylvania on a farm, and for one of the classes we just went out, we learned about different things that grow wild. And they're weeds that we would have in our yard, but we went around the property and then actually just collected it and had it as part of dinner. So dandelion greens, the flowers from dandelions, I think it's violet, perhaps, just weeds that grow in the yard. And we just went around the yard and dug them up and had them for dinner.
There's a famous Michelin star restaurant not too far from here, and their signature dish is a little salad, a starter, that's called like from the fields or something, and it has all sorts of bits and pieces like that that have been got from roundabout.
There's a little restaurant near us that does game. You know, a lot of their stuff is local game. It's is that Fairhill Inn, John? I think it's what it's called.
Fairhill Inn,
they have in their backyard now, they've built a greenhouse, so they probably do the same thing, Daisy, like you're saying, where they make their own little salads and, you know, the boutique greens or whatever they call them. But yeah, that's interesting to be like, oh, you grew it right in the backyard, you know?
Yeah, nice. To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Wendell Berry. The world as it is would always be a reminder of the world that was and of the world that is to come. Bye-bye, Keto Lovelies.